As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Episode 116 of the Keith Law Show. It is my annual Oscar preview podcast with my friend Chris Crawford. He's a little ahead of me on the movies this year. There's a couple of pretty significant ones I haven't gotten to for time reasons or for availability reasons, or because apparently I live in the hinterlands and a couple of these movies never actually played very close to me or won't play close to me until after the Oscars, which I think is bizarre and a huge lost opportunity. But anyway, I'm not in the movie business. I'm in the baseball business. Since the last podcast, did post an early draft ranking, just top 30 names, which is about one round's worth. It's not exactly the number of picks in the first round, but that should at least get us started. It is a college-heavy draft. My list is also very college-heavy. Also reflects the fact that some of the better high school players haven't really gotten started yet or only getting started this month, and so I have just slid them just slightly down to reflect the fact that we have more data on some of these college guys. And that ranking I will update multiple times over the course of the season, over the course of the spring, and I expect it to change pretty substantially. But that is up for subscribers to The Athletic. I also answered some questions for our Blue Jays writer, Caitlin McGrath, about the Blue Jays farm system, where I ranked them, what I wrote about their top 20, and some other names from the system, which is also available. It went up on Tuesday for subscribers to The Athletic. Well, now, it is an annual tradition. I am joined by my longtime friend, Chris Crawford, who now is a baseball writer for RotoWire. He also has a Patreon, patreon.com/MLB prospect guides. He's been doing prospect writing on his own for many, many years now. And like me, he loves movies and he loves to talk and argue about movies. And that's why we do this. I think this is the fifth year we've done some variation of this. That sound right?
It seems like it's either 5 or 86.
Something like that.
It could be any number in between.
Yeah.
It's been, it is definitely a reasonable thing. It's been a lot of fun, and I appreciate you allowing me to chime about. It's kind of like the thing, you know, all actors want to become rappers and all rappers want to become actors. All prospect writers really want to be movie critics. And I think in some way,
or they want to
Christy Lemire and Tim Grierson want to write about prospects. I just know that's true.
Yes. Or baseball writers want to just be Bruce Springsteen. I think that's the other thing.
Yeah.
Or something like that. That's just weird. Yuck. Yeah.
Go ahead.
All right, let's jump into this. So this is Oscar previews. We will at the end talk about some of our favorite movies of the year, many of which were not nominated for Oscars. Mm-hmm. But let's just jump right in with Best Picture. Just full disclosure, I've only seen 8 so far. My wife and I will watch Women Talking in the next few days before the ceremony.
Nice.
I just can't with the blue people. I'm sorry. I'm just not interested. It's like 3+ hours. I never saw the first one. Everyone was like, first one's really cool special effects and not that good. And you know, that's not going to get me to the theater. I'm like, you know, I like to sit at home if I'm not at a ballpark. So anyway, I think you've seen all 10 though, right?
I have seen all 10. I have.
And the Blue People is your favorite?
The Blue People is definitely my favorite. It's certainly not a horrific movie. I've seen many, many worse. One of them received a couple of Oscar nods actually this year, but it's not very good. If not for the special effects, like I could not recommend watching that movie at home because unless for some reason you have the same type of system as what you would get from your AMC or Regal Cinema. And if you're listening to this podcast, congratulations to The Athletic because you're pulling in some really fancy folks.
No.
but it's just watching the movie for the sake of story and plot and acting and character development, it would be a very hard pass. But there's no denying that James Cameron is very good at what he does in terms of like technical scale. It's just not, it's story has never been his strengths, even for movies that I've really enjoyed, like Terminator and True Lies and that stuff. It's not, I don't enjoy those movies because of their rich character development. I enjoy them because bang, bang, pew, pew. That is completely different. And there's totally a place for that. There's totally a place for that. But I'm not sure necessarily if 2023 Best Picture is that place.
So I assume Everything Everywhere All at Once is going to win. All right, that just seems like it has swept through award season. I love that movie. I am completely fine with it. I know a lot of critics do not agree. That movie is very much on my wavelength on multiple levels. So first, when I finally watched that, I was like, yeah, they made this movie for me. That's just like, right? I wish there were more movies like this. A little, you know, little sci-fi, a little hysterical realism, a really good family story at the core of it that had a lot of heart and was and it was also really funny, and it had musical references that I completely got. Like, this was just for me. Do you think there is any chance that it doesn't win, like any reasonable chance that it doesn't win Best Picture?
And there's a shot that something else can win. I think it's down to two.
Okay, what's the other one? I guess that's really the other question. Else has a chance?
Just real quick, from Vegas Insider, which pretty much averages out everybody's chances, you would have to bet $700 to win $100.
Yeah, I'm not
going to
do that.
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I'm not going to do that.
It is minus 700. Yeah, that is not a sharp bet. But All Quiet on the Western Front is 14 to 1.
Is that second? Because it won the BAFTAs.
That is not second. Oh. Banshees of Inisherin is second at 11-1. I don't think that. You know what? I'm calling it. I'm going to call it whatever I want, Keith. No, you're right. I totally mispronounce it every single time. But All Quiet on the Western Front at 14-1 would be, if you're a gambler, that's where I'd be laying my money down. Just because it's got so many technical shots, and what happens with these things is, it's not necessarily about who votes for it for number one. It's a points type system. And I think it's going to finish second or third on so many critics lists. Whereas Everything Everywhere All at Once, like you said, Keith, there are critics who adore this movie.
Yeah.
There are many critics I really respect who it just didn't work for. And I could see that being a movie that finishes 8th, 9th, 10th, which will hurt it. Ultimately, I think it's going to get enough first place votes that it's going to be end up being the winner. Vegas is very good at this. They have a pretty darn good track record. I think Las Vegas is doing okay last time I checked.
Yeah.
All Quiet on the Western Front, though, would be the guy that I think has the shot. A couple of major publications have predicted it as the winner very recently. So I think it's down to a two movie race, and I guess we'll find out on Sunday. But if I had to, if everything was even, Everything Everywhere was even, I would bet on Everything Everywhere All at Once.
All Quiet on the Western Front did nothing for me. Like, to me, that was like, oh, war is bad, huh?
Yeah.
Thanks for letting me know.
Yeah. Like, just, I'm kind of over the whole, war movie thing. And there's been some unbelievably good war movies. And from a technical scale, I really wish I could have seen it on the big screen, because it is a really well choreographed movie. It is a movie that has some really beautifully horrific, for lack of a better term, shots that are
like
really
cool
to watch.
I can't imagine that doesn't win cinematography, right? Especially given what else was nominated.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a couple of locks, I think, for where All Quiet on the Western Front is going to win. And that's, again, because it is nominated in so many categories and took home so many BAFTAs, which can be a pretty good predictor for this stuff. It's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but it can be a pretty good outlier of predicting what is going to take stuff home. It didn't do a lot for me either. Like, I watched it well after I had put out my top 10 list. It didn't. There was nothing that made me go, oh, I need to knock this off for this. It's a perfectly cromulent movie, to steal from my favorite. I didn't hate myself from watching it like I did so many movies this year. But Best Picture? Nah, not even close for me.
Do you read anything into the fact that it did not get a Best Director nomination? Best Director nominees, for folks who don't know, or I'll name the movies rather than the directors because I think that will connect with more people. The Banshees of Inisherin. Mm-hmm. Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fabelmans, some like rookie director, his name's not familiar to me. Tar and
Spielberg.
Yes. Right. And a bit of a surprise to me was Triangle of Sadness, but not for All Quiet on the Western Front, which is the one thing I look at and think, hey, look, it's not unprecedented, but it seems to make it a little less likely that All Quiet pulls off the upset.
It's certainly, like, if you look, there's a pretty large connection between movies that have been at least had a nomination for Best Director and winning Best Picture. So that's the thing, is it will have to become the one of the rare exceptions to do this. I don't have in front of me the list of movies that have done it. I don't believe it's impossible, but that would be my thing. And that's one of the reasons why I think Everything Everywhere All at Once is such a wide favorite, because it has the nominations in the places that you absolutely need the nominations, and it's going to win a lot of them as well. In fact, just to get into it real quick, you would have to bet $1,800 on the Daniels to win $100. They are a prohibitive favorite to win Best Director.
That's interesting. So I'm going to jump ahead to Best Supporting Actor, because in my mind, that's the lock, is Ke Huy Quan for... because he's won everything, right? I don't know. Is there a Best Supporting Actor-ish a major award that he hasn't won? And he is...
I haven't seen anything.
And by the way, I'm all in. I thought he was great. Yeah. I'm very happy to see him win all these things. But also, he's like the feel-good hit of the winter, right? Like, that is totally... 100%. Everyone's pulling for him. It's a comeback story. It's so many... right? Yeah, he's going to win. Like, he's, to me, if you said, what's the one you'd put your 401k... on, it would be him. And you know, his competition is good. Brian Tyree Henry in Causeway was basically a co-lead in a fine movie. He was outstanding. And then I think that Brendan Gleeson, who was also kind of a co-lead in The Banshees along with Barry Keoghan, who had a lesser role but was also nominated, you know, you always wonder, two actors from the same movie, do they tend to cancel each other out, like crossing out each other's support a little bit on ballots? You know, I don't know if that's the case here, but I just feel like Quan is by far the one I would feel most comfortable saying, yep, push all your chips in the center on him winning.
Yeah, it's not even close. Like, this is, it's funny, his odds are only slightly worse than the Daniels for Best Picture. He's minus 2,000, so you'd have to bet $2,000 to win $100. But like, it's the lock of locks. It's kind of interesting, actually. Second right now is Keegan. He's at 14-1. Gleason's at 18-1. Judd Hirsch in his 45 seconds in that movie is at 34-1. And then Tyree Henry is at 42-1. By the way, I think I might argue Tyree Henry is the second best performance of those guys. And that's a good field. Like, look, sometimes I wish they would name Best Supporting Actor and Best Supporting Actress just like, who steals the movie? Like, the movie stealer of the year.
Judi Dench was in the movie for like 13 minutes, but she was the queen. Yeah, have a care with my name, you'll wear it out. Right? Like, that is... And I know people don't think she deserved, et cetera, et cetera. To me, that's the exemplar of what people think of for Best Supporting Actor. You can actually win by doing less because it's more supporting rather than... is essentially a, you know, Gleason and Tyree Henry both are co-leads who just were submitted in the supporting actor category.
And that's kind of one of the reasons why I'm excited for Quan for a lot of reasons, because number one, the narrative does matter here. People can say whatever they want about like the performance. It's a fantastic performance.
Oh, he's great.
But the narrative matters here. The guy was out of acting for a very long time, was doing stunt coordination for movies rather than acting in them. And he gives one of the best performances of the year, but it's actually a true supporting performance too. Michelle Yeoh is the lead of that movie, obviously, like the lead of that movie. It is, the movie is centered literally around her performance. He is actually giving a supporting performance, and it's a terrific performance. He does steal some scenes, especially at the end. I won't spoil it, but that speech that he gives to his daughter, just crushes me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it crushes everybody, but it is so good. And again, it's funny, like Banshees, like there are, if either Keegan or Gleason were nominated like 85 to 90% of the years, they would be in really good shape. But yeah,
Keegan's
just
got a pretty good narrative. You know, people have talked him up. He's won a couple of other, you know, awards where I think he wasn't in direct competition with Kwan, if I remember correctly. And he's great. I've liked him. He was good in Dunkirk in a small role. He was very good at American Animals. Was not a great movie, but he was really good in it. It was
really good.
This is a guy to watch. And then I kind of lost track of him a little bit. I don't think I've seen as many of his intermediate projects, but then seeing him in that this year was like, oh yeah. Yeah. I've just generally liked him and everything he's done.
The thing I really like about him is that he, and it's unfortunate for him, but he looks exactly like Ezra Miller, only he's not a terrible person. So it's a nice thing that's going for him in that regard. By the way, Brendan Gleeson has never given a bad performance in anything. Like, he is the most consistently good actor I think I have seen of, like, even like, I don't know if you watched Gangs of New York, which I think came out like a 45 years ago at this point. I turned 40, by the way, on Thursday, Keith. And oh my gosh. But he's only in the movie for like, thank you, sir. But yeah, I'm just feeling the age when I think of like how long these movies come out. He's in the movie for like 2.5 minutes. And I just like want to throw flowers at him every time he's on the screen because he's just so good. But long story short, best supporting actor, there is absolutely no shot in hell that anybody but Kwan is taking this thing home, and nobody should. No, all of these performances are good, but nobody else should take home the award.
So let's just do this one quickly because I want to spend more time on the two leads. But for best supporting actress, is it just Angela Bassett? I mean, is there a chance that anybody else steals this one?
This is the most fascinating one, I think, for betting odds, because there are three actresses here who are all between plus 130 and plus 175. You've got Angela Bassett is the slight favorite at plus 130. Jamie Lee Curtis is at plus 165. Carrie Condon is at plus 175. I can't recall a time where there were three this close. Like, I've seen two close, and we have two really close in another award that we're going to talk about. But these are three that are like neck and neck. I think Jamie Lee Curtis is starting to pick up a little bit of momentum. It seemed like, well, what was interesting was when Bassett started getting the nominations, it was a big surprise to some folks. Like, it was like, well, and she's great in the movie, don't get me wrong, but it was like, really? This is the Marvel performance that is getting the nominations after all of this stuff that has made kajillions of dollars? This is the one? But she's great. And I think there's some narrative a little bit with, of course, her playing the mother of Chadwick Boseman. And that whole movie is really, and respectfully and deservedly so, is basically a mourning movie, a movie about mourning that is mourning Boseman's character, and her being the mother character obviously plays into that, but she's fantastic. I think it would be really fun to see Jamie Lee Curtis win. Do I think it's the best performance of these five? Absolutely not. I think Stephanie Sue is the person that I would actually elect if I was voting for this stuff as the best supporting actress. She's got no shot. She's at 34-1, and Hong Chau is at 34-1 for one of the worst movies that I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, I actually haven't seen The Whale, but so I'm going to lean on you for that. Hong Chau was good in The Menu.
Freaking
That was the funny thing. She's great. Like, actually, she's pretty good. She's creepy as hell.
She's great. She's also great in Poker Face in her episode of that show, which
we
is
have. We're holding off on fantastic. That. To finish some movies, awesome. Basically. So nice. I just want to say,
is this a 3-1 race? Go ahead. Sorry.
I like Jamie Lee Curtis in general. I thought she was just fine mm-hmm. in Everything Everywhere. Like Stephanie Hsu is way better. If that were a two person ballot, I wouldn't even think twice about whose name to check. Like to me, Curtis is, you know, long time actor, Nepo baby, as she called herself at the SAG Awards. I thought that was pretty clever. highly respected, very well liked. Like you always hear, you know, other people speaking very highly of her. She's fine in that movie. She's just kind of fine. Whereas Stephanie Hsu has a lot more to do and is incredibly important in that movie and really rises to the occasion. Oh, I was thrilled that she got the nomination at all because I was worried that she might not because Curtis was the more famous.
It was a surprise for a lot of people. Like it was, up until like where she started getting some late nominations, it was like, is she even? And there was unfortunately some talk about like whether or not, and this we can get into, we probably shouldn't get into, like we don't see a lot of times where we have two Asian women nominated for awards. We have three this year, which is amazing. But there was some talk about, will this happen? Are they going to go... just based on history and stuff, and that of course is awful. It should just be the best performance. And Chow is very, very good in The Whale, but Sue's performance is so important to that movie. It doesn't look like she's going to be like at the start of the movie. It's you can tell something's going on, but the turn that character makes is so fantastic, and without her performance, that could go there's a lot of things in Everything Everywhere All at Once that could go really wrong in the wrong hands. Like that movie could be just meta crap if not for the brilliant directing, but also the brilliant acting performances as well. And Jamie Lee Curtis is hilarious at times in that movie. It's more of a comedic performance than anything else, and I do like rewarding comedy because she's very funny and she's got some very funny gags and some physical comedy that's fun to watch, but like best supporting actress, I can't go that far. It's awesome to see her nominated, but I think this will be more of a career award win if she does win. I think Condon is fantastic too. Like she's a very important character in that movie, which was my favorite of the movies that were nominated for the Oscars this year. I think that she gets a little bit sideswept in the movie. It's so male character driven, unfortunately, that I think we kind of forget about Condon's character. But like that scene specifically that she has with Keegan by the water is one of the best scenes of the year, in my personal opinion. And her emotional reaction to that and her reaction to her fights with her brother and all of the times that she's in the bar is terrific. I'd have no problem with her winning whatsoever. But if I had a favorite of the five, it'd probably be Sue.
Gotcha. Interesting to sort of side point too, after years of seeing a ton of criticism for the Oscars, you know, Oscars hashtag Oscars hashtag Oscars so white. Of the four categories, best actors, actually all five are white men. The others actually have some reasonable diversity though. Quite a bit more, I think, than at least them we're used to. Which would also if Jamie Lee Curtis does win, beating out three women of color in the best supporting actress category, I'm not saying that should be a factor. It's just not the best optics necessarily.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Great point.
Let's jump to best actor, because I'm assuming best actress is the one we'll sort of hold that off for a second, because I'm assuming that's the one you're talking about as being the tightest of them.
Yes.
So again, at a little bit of a disadvantage here, I've not seen The Whale because I'm refused to pay $20 to see a movie nobody seems to like. and Living never actually played that near me. I would love to see that movie. It is. I love Bill Nighy. And I actually haven't seen the original Kurosawa movie, but I've seen several of his movies and, of course, really like his movie, you know, what I've seen. I mean, I would watch Bill Nighy in probably just about everything. He is one of the only good things in the just atrocious movie my wife makes me watch every year, Love Actually. But he's like, he is the one character and one person that whole movie who realizes what a farce the whole thing is and just leans right into it. I'm like, you know what?
Yeah.
I respect that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'll get both of those eventually. But at this point, like I said, Living, I would have actually gone to a theater. I think it is actually playing in our local art theater after the Oscars. And I'm not going to be here anyway because spring training. But I was like, good job, guys. Like, really whiffed on that one. So I have seen – the only ones I've seen are Elvis, Austin Butler, Banshees, Colin Farrell, and Paul Mescal in After Sun, which I have to say, of all the nominations anybody received, that is the one that made me the happiest because it was not expected. And he is so good in that movie. And that movie is so good. If you have, if you're listening to this and you like movies at all, After Sun has been available for rent for almost 2 months at this point. Do yourself a favor. Go watch this movie before you watch basically anything else. It is tremendous. It should absolutely have gotten a Best Picture nomination. It should have gotten a screenplay nomination. This was, I believe, the only nomination it got for anything. But I'm glad it got something, because I think even showing up just once there helps validate the movie a little bit for commercial purposes. And if that just means more people see this movie, great, because it was for me, absolutely a top five movie of the year.
Yeah, it was one of my favorites as well. I saw it after I had put out some list stuff, but like, it is so good. And I think she deserved, the daughter deserved a Best Supporting Actress nomination, in my personal opinion as well. I would have nominated her over Jamie Lee Curtis again. And I'm not meaning this to be an anti-Jamie Lee Curtis podcast. It's just it's such a weird nomination to me. And the fact that she is like second in favorites. This one is pretty close as well. Frasier is the favorite right now. You have to bet $180 to win 100, but Austin Butler is plus 120. Colin Farrell is at 14 to 1. It's possible. I don't think it's going to happen, obviously.
He is.
Mescal and Nye have no shot. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Farrell's really
no
good.
No shot. Yeah.
Like
Farrell's great.
The shift in Colin Farrell from, heartthrob, like they tried to make action movies around action-ish movies or thrillers around him to like, holy cow, this guy is an incredible, serious actor who's also very good at like I think he plays his good looks in certain ways to be a little charming or a little rakish. And when he sits there in that movie and says, "I won't put my donkey out when I'm sad," like I just died, right? Like that is one of the absolute lines of the year. It is perfectly, it's a great, obviously it's great writing. It is so perfectly delivered at that point. It's like, God, there's very little this guy can't do. And it's just, it shocks me to think of Colin Farrell 15, 20 years ago. Like if you're younger and you don't remember who Colin Farrell, what was that terrible Phone Booth movie? They were just trying to basically build anything around this guy, thinking people would just show up to see him. It's like, no, actually he's the guy now you actually say, oh, Colin Farrell's in a movie. I should go see that. It's probably good.
So to bring it to our baseball background, Colin Farrell is kind of like the Nolan Arenado defensive acting.
Ah, oh, there you go. Yes, right?
Because we were like, yeah, this guy's picking third base. And all of a sudden, he's one of the greatest third basemen I've ever seen.
Right.
And now Colin Farrell isn't one of the greatest actors I've ever seen. But
no, but he's
consistently good in everything he does now. Yep. Like, and he's maybe it's a little bit like better at picking scripts, and he did enough. Like, he did some action movies. I talked to my friend Michael Bauman. He actually likes this movie. I think it's terrible. It was called The Recruit with Al Pacino. That is just dreadful. And he was the bad guy in Daredevil, and that was absolutely terrible. Although he does give a decent performance. I think we got to talk about Frazier and Butler, because these are the two guys who are going to win. And I would say it's probably going to be the worst Best Actor I've seen in my time of like taking this seriously.
For either movie or for performance?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
And it's mostly movie. Like, both of these guys are trying really hard. And look, I will say this. We've talked about this in every single podcast we've done, because there's always – it was actually kind of nice this year that we didn't get a bunch of people playing real people nominated for stuff. I did for a second forget that was Austin Butler playing Elvis. I did forget that. And that is a huge credit to him, because – like, we talked about it with that dreadful Winston Churchill movie. Like, I never for one minute stopped thinking, that is Gary Oldman playing Winston Churchill. I never for one minute forgot that was, I just forgot her name. The lady who played Tammy Faye Baker, Jessica Chastain. I never forgot that's Jessica Chastain in a lot of makeup playing Tammy Faye Baker. I do forget for a few moments that's Austin Butler playing Elvis. Like, he does, he sounds like him. He's got the same charismatic nature to him. He does actually have some Elvis qualities. It's not a great performance, though. Like, there are certainly a lot of people who I think could have gotten this nomination over him. But if you play Elvis Presley and your movie is not 10 pounds of crap in a 5-pound bag, you're getting a Best Actor nomination. Like, that is just going to be a thing. Like, there are people who eat that stuff up with a spoon. So Brendan Fraser, like, the whale. Okay, I have to admit, as a larger person, like, this movie was a little bit hit home in the wrong way more for me. I will admit that I have some biases towards this. But it's such a leering, fat-shaming movie for the entire thing. And Frazier is wearing just a ton of fat suit stuff. And now, look, if you've seen Brendan Fraser, he is not the same size as he was when he was making The Mummy. That's how life works for most people. He is certainly not – he's not morbidly obese, but he's a larger guy. But they put all of this – glob on him, and they focus and they make these. It's one of the worst directed movies I've ever seen. And Darren Aronofsky was a fraud. I'm going to say it right now. As good as Requiem for a Dream was, and as much as I like Black Swan, the last few have been so awful that I'm willing to say, and a lot of people liked Mother. I hated Mother. It's such an obvious, climate change. Yeah, that's a bad thing. It's almost as bad as the movie that we spent about 45 minutes talking about last year.
Oh, God.
About climate change.
I had forgotten like that movie. Bad. Thank you for putting that back in my head.
You're very, very welcome. Frazier's good in it, and there's some real emotional heft in some scenes. But let's be honest here. The reason why he's the favorite is people love the big makeup stuff. People love a real actory performance, and people love a comeback. Name the last Brendan Fraser movie before The Whale, I dare you. There is that narrative about people love a Hollywood comeback. Mescal should win this running away, man. Like, he was so good in a movie that really surprised me. I have to thank my buddy Christy Lemire for putting me onto this movie, because I'd never even heard of it. And it happened to be playing at my theater about 35 miles from me in Tacoma. They play all the hoity-toity liberal snowflake movies that, you know, I love. So, and I just bawled, like just bawled throughout this movie, because it's such a, even as someone who doesn't have children, I felt it, you know, I felt like it connected with me how I treat my nieces, like the love I have for them, but also knowing that like, memory's fleeting, man. We don't, and that's one of my favorite things about that movie too, is you really don't know what, without spoiling any stuff, you don't know how much of this is accurate and how much of this is how stuff plays out, but it doesn't matter. it's about the, and that's kind of the point. And it makes you really appreciate like the relationship that you have with the young ones, because yeah, there's some stuff that you go through. I think, I think you can tell us, Keith, as a father and a stepfather, that it's tough out there, and there are going to be moments that are great, and there are going to be some moments that are not so great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but there are these memories that formulate. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it is, parenting is an unbelievable challenge.
Yeah,
you know, and that is, there is constantly that thought, right, that there will be a day when I'm not here, and how will my daughter and my stepdaughters remember me? Did I do enough? Am I doing enough? You never feel like you're doing enough. I never feel like I'm doing enough. My daughter's approaching the point where she's going to go off to college soon. And so, I don't know if that's really struck me quite as, right? It's going to hit a lot harder when that gets much closer. I'm aware of that, sure, almost like in an academic sense, like, yes, there will be a point when she goes off to college, 'cause that's what the calendar says. But, there's a lot. There is a lot going on in such a simple movie. I mean, that to me, you want to talk about, I said Everything Everywhere All at Once is very much made for me. Movies like that don't come along very often. And if you look at the movies I tend to praise the most, especially when I'm a little against the grain or praising something that's just not as mainstream, like I think of Columbus a couple of years ago, where that was just a tiny movie, mostly just two people and kind of a lot of dialogue. It's like, mm-hmm. yeah, actually, that's it. That's all. If the writing is really good, and it was in both of these movies, you're going to kind of suck me in. Like that to me is just, requires a lot. It has to be well directed. You need great lead performances. You need a really, really tight script. And this one manages to do even more than some of those movies with, again, working with the same constraints. It looks like it was filmed for about $20. And Frankie Corio plays the daughter. And I think this was her first role. And she's tremendous. I mean, you think of the amount of weight in that film that is put on her, in addition to Paul Mescal's an experienced actor. And so it's not surprising that he's great. It was probably the best performance of his career, but it's still... he's got that experience. For her to deliver like she did is incredibly impressive. It reminded me a little bit of Brooklyn Prince, who played Mooney in The Florida Project, who apparently is in Cocaine Bear.
Yeah.
Yes, I've not seen Cocaine Bear. And I was like...
I haven't seen Cocaine Bear either.
I mean, it seems like a bit of a romp. Like, I don't think it's a good movie.
Yeah.
But I was like, Brooklyn Prince is in this? And now I'm like 5% more interested in seeing it.
There you go. By the way, real quick, I wanted to give, we crap on the Oscars every time this thing, and don't get me wrong, they screwed up pretty good in some of this stuff. There were three loud performances from extremely famous actors that get nominated 99% of the time. I thought of this while we looking at the nominations. Tom Hanks for Elvis gets nominated 99 out of 100 times. Oh,
thank God. That was just annoying.
It was extremely annoying. Brad Pitt and Margot Robbie for Babylon, which is just awful. And probably like the most disappointing movie of like the last 15 years for me, just because of the cast and who was directing it. I have loved everything Damien Chazelle has done. La La Land is one of my all-time favorite
movies.
It's
like 3 hours, man. Too. What's with the three-hour movies?
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, this has got to stop, man. Like, this is why, people talk about, why are people going to Netflix? Well, I'd rather watch my three-hour movie at home than go to a movie theater.
Hey, I love Drive My Car, which was 3 hours. But we watched that at home. Movie. We waited. Yeah, we had a weekend.
It's a way better experience.
Kids were with the co-parents. We parked in the living room. It was great. Like, Drive My Car is definitely not a movie you need to see on a larger screen. But, yeah, this is like, it's like great inflation, right? At some point, somebody has to be like, nobody asked for this.
Yeah. Yes. But I did want to shout out the Oscars for not nominating those performances, because it would have been really easy.
Oh, what was the third? Sorry, it was Pitt, Hanks. Who was the third?
Pitt, Margot Robbie for the same movie.
Gotcha. I thought you might say Tom Cruise.
That is.
For Top Gun Maverick.
That would be another one. And look.
Yeah.
I'm so glad they nominated Mescal over Cruise. Don't get me wrong.
Absolutely.
I liked Top Gun. I like Top Gun Maverick.
So did I. Actually, thought
it was so much better than I thought.
Oh, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it was.
And it's not my kind of movie.
I have to tell you, it is not my kind of movie usually either. And it is, you know, does it rely on nostalgia a little too much for my taste? Yeah, it does. But does there are some brilliant, brilliant choreographed scenes in the air. And I'm not a huge Miles Teller fan, even though Whiplash is Damien Chazelle. I think that's an unbelievably good movie, and he gives a very good performance in it. But he's solid in the film. The supporting cast is great. I don't have a problem with it being nominated for Best Picture. I think that it should have been the 10th of 10 instead of like the 5th of 10, which
yeah,
is kind of
totally
seeming
agree.
Like what it maybe was. Yeah,
yeah, but I agree. I actually was fine
with
that.
Zero issue with it.
I have not my kind of movie. And in multiple ways, I'm not a big Tom Cruise fan. I respect him as an actor. I cannot separate the actor from the person. It was good. It was actually like a legitimately good movie. And I have no issue at all with that getting a Best Picture nomination. I think also expanding it to 10, expanding the list of nominees to 10, and now saying we're going the full 10, which was really annoying that they'd have years where they, I don't know if they ever actually nominated the full 10 before they required it. You know what? I'm fine taking a movie like that that is commercially successful, has broad appeal, and saying, you know what, we can honor movies like this. It's not like when it's five. If there were only five nominees and you were giving one of those to just a big blockbuster type movie, we would be bemoaning all of the better movies that got edged out. And in this case, I mean, it's better than Elvis. I actually thought Top Gun was better than All Quiet on the Western Front. Obviously, I'm kind of in a minority. Mm. And it was better than the puking movie. We haven't even talked about Trial of Sadness, and I don't want to because that movie was – not only did I not think it was very good, just the last third is good. The first two thirds are not good, and it's just gross for grossness sake, which to me is – yeah. And it got a couple of nominations and not even the one for the actress who's only in the last third of the movie really who did get a Golden Globe nomination. I thought Top Gun Maverick was better than several of the other nominees and was completely fine and happy to see it get a nomination. I mean, I think as of right now, it's just outside my top 10. I have not, I'm continuing to see movies from last year's cycle, so the list is still pretty fluid, but it's like 13th right now on my list as I'm eyeballing it. So,
you can't complain about something like that getting nominated.
There
are
then you come off like a snob. I worry about I might come
yeah
off,
oh
know, saying
yeah
that.
Well yeah I'd have no problem coming off like a snob with movie stuff
also
but like it's a really fine film that I would recommend if you can see it in a theater just because it's like again the cinematography is beautiful and there are some especially the stuff in the air like. Again, though, I mean, if this movie had nothing to do with Top Gun, do I think it would have made $80 billion or whatever the hell it did? No. And maybe we don't talk about it quite as enough. But if it was just called Flight School, I think it would have been an excellent movie. And I would have no problem with it getting a Best Picture nomination. But there's no doubt that the reason that this movie is fourth right now, it's 29-1. It's not going to win. But the reason why it has a shot, a slim shot, is that it's Top Gun Maverick. It's the sequel to that very, very famous movie with the soundtrack.
So let's wrap before we get to our personal favorites, just to talk a little bit about Best Actress, which is, I think the tightest race at this point, sentimental favorite, Michelle Yeoh against Kate Blanchett, where I think I've even written this, like, I don't think Michelle Yeoh is actually the best performance this year among a leading actress. Like, I think Kate Blanchett was better. I thought Andrea Riseborough was actually really good into Leslie.
Really good. Yeah.
But I'm going to also be very happy if Michelle Yeoh wins for lots of, non-movie related reasons. And she's good. She's not undeserving.
Right.
Who do you think ends up winning this one as of right now?
So this is like as close as I've ever seen it. Right now, you have to bet $125 to win $100 on Michelle Yeoh. You have to bet $115 on Kate Blanchett to win best actor. I have no idea why I struggled with that. 120 minus 125 for Michelle Yeoh, minus 115 for Cate Blanchett, and then Riseborough for her performance into Leslie's 29-1, Michelle Williams, which I think it's worth pointing out here. If Michelle Williams, so the Fablemans very specifically said, we are nominating Michelle Williams for best actress and not best supporting actress. If she was the nomination for best supporting actress, it would be the lock of locks. She would have won this award and pretty deservedly so. I think she gives a really good performance. And then Ana de Armas for a movie that Keith really liked. He's not going to talk about it, but he really liked Blonde. It was one of his favorite movies. Don't look at anything
That's
else.
For
everything
you, the
else
whale for me,
music.
Blonde. That is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
I hated Blonde. It's terrible. And it's from a guy who's made some really interesting and movies that I've really enjoyed, but Blonde was not one of them.
Nope.
Now, look, De Armas gives a really good performance from what she's given.
Didn't even
but
think
it's also
that.
Like, yeah, yeah, it's fair. It's fair. I want to give her credit because I've liked her so much. Like, ever since Knives Out, which we said she was going to be a star from that movie, Keith, and we were right. Nobody else had the audacity to predict. Yeah. Someone who looks like Ana de Armas becoming a star. How could we have seen it coming? Yeah. I think that Blanchett is the most deserving of these five. I know you had some issues with the final third of the film.
And I
none of that has to do with Cate Blanchett's performance.
No, at all. It's a script question.
She's great. Yeah, it's a script question. And Todd Field, by the way, I think directs the hell out of that movie as well. Even though the final third is questionable, I think that's fair to say. And reality versus I don't even know the right way to say it without spoiling the movie. So, look, I think also we got to talk a little bit about the Riseborough stuff because this was the most out of nowhere nomination I've ever seen. Like to say
a movie that made $27,000.
I had negative. What the hell is To Leslie? Like there was no way that this was going to happen. There are these two guys I watched, twin brothers, called the Oscar Expert, and when that came across, they both just kind of started running around.
Yeah. Like, this was Hayden Simpson. If you want to deep, right? This was Hayden Simpson. Cubs taking Hayden Simpson in the first round.
Yes. And look, I think that we got to look at how we go about, and we, it's like Keith and I have anything to do with this.
Absolutely. We control the whole process from my home office.
We control.
It's also my guest.
I'll send you an email. I'll send you an email about who's getting nominated in 2024.
Yes.
In a couple days.
We need to figure that out. Yeah. We need to start the planning process.
Look, there was a massive campaign, and some of it was, from what I've read, maybe uncouth. I don't think anything illegal happened or anything like that, maybe. Yeah. And so, look. My problem with the Oscars is this, is that the campaigning for the films plays a major factor in this. Like who gets screeners, who doesn't get screeners, who puts out the big thing in Variety, who has the parties, that type of stuff absolutely matters. And it shouldn't. It should just be about who gives the best performance. Last year, there was a big thing about West Side Story, which, you know, wasn't a great movie, but it almost didn't get like one of the most beautiful cinematography movies that I've seen in like the last few years. For everybody who has a problem with the movie, I get it, but it is immaculately shot and just absolutely beautiful to watch. Almost didn't get nominations for stuff because nobody got screeners for it for some reason. Like there was some sort of issue. That's a problem. And especially, you know, as there's still pandemic issues. There are still people who don't feel super comfortable going into movie theaters at this point for a lot of reasons. And also, you know, cost stuff. That's obviously not an issue for critics. But I do know several critics who still do not feel comfortable necessarily going to see a movie unless there is going to be social distancing and people wearing masks and all of that good stuff. That's still an issue, and that's not going to be going away. So the screening stuff becomes even more important. But I really hope that going forward, it's just, this is not going to happen. It should just be more about
who gave the best performance rather than who threw the best party. Having said that, Riseborough is terrific. She carries that movie. Like, more, there's a lot of really good actors in that movie, but without Riseborough's performance, that is a movie that I watch on Hallmark. Like, right. That's just right. That is just the absolute truth of that. Without a terrific lead performance, yeah. That is fodder. That is absolutely nothing that I'm thinking about ever again. But she's so good, and she's good in everything. Riseborough is like one of the best actresses working in Hollywood right now. I think Blanchett should win. I would bet on Yeo to win because I think there's a little more narrative in her story right now. But this is going to be really close. Really, really close. The other three have no shot. But Yeo and Blanchett, either one winning would make me happy for different reasons. If you made me pick somebody, though, I'd go with Blanchett just because she, I mean, talk about carrying a movie. Like, of any actor nominated, like, she carries her movie more than anybody else does, for sure.
So let's just close off with some of our favorites from last year. Right, you can run through, you know, 10 or fewer. Just like, I'm most interested in movies you liked that we didn't discuss and that people may not have, maybe not necessarily have seen, or that just missed out on nominations you thought they particularly deserved.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm just going through my 10 of things that we didn't talk. Marcel Michel with Shoes On is beautiful. I think I have not always been the biggest Jenny Slate fan. I think she gives a wonderful performance. And yes, it's a performance. I know it's just a voice, but it is carried through this. I don't know if you saw Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. It's going to win Best Animated. I really enjoyed it. Decision to Leave, Park Chan-wook, everything he does is amazing. I was really shocked it didn't get nominated for Best Foreign Film, but it was a really good foreign film year. EO. So EO is another donkey movie. Amazing. And I would vote for it actually for Best Foreign Film, actually. I think it is so touching and so poignant. I was emotionally wrecked coming out of that movie. Just absolutely destroyed. But my favorite movie, that's Keith, I don't know if you've even seen this one yet, and we were talking about three-hour movies and me complaining about them. This one's even longer than 3 hours. If you haven't seen RRR yet,
Oh my gosh. It didn't get nominated, and move down the priority queue.
Yeah, I totally get it. And look, I talked about, so for my old company, I had Christy Lemire and Alonzo Duralde of Breakfast All Day on, and it was their favorite movie of the year at the time that we recorded. It's a 3-hour movie. And so I was like, all right. I watched their review of it where they both gave it a 10 and said, all right, 3-hour movie. I'm going to watch an hour and a half of it. And then I'll watch the other hour and a half of it the next day. And I watched it twice. I watched it back to back. It's so, I don't even want to spoil all the stuff that happens in it. You've probably all seen The Great Dance, and it's going to win Best Song at the Oscars, which is really cool. You've probably seen the scenes with the tigers and stuff like that. Everything you want in a movie is in RRR. There is action, there's comedy, there's suspense. Tells a really interesting story about colonization as well, which is, you know, obviously an important thing going on forever. It's fantastic. And it's time we take more of the Bollywood stuff seriously too. Like, I know we joke about it, and look, I do have issues with the fact that a lot of the Bollywood style is taking movies and basically recreating them without, and doing just enough different to not get sued. There's no doubt about that. But the actual original Indian cinema films are awesome. They are great at what they do. Is it different than your typical American cinema? You bet your sweet bippy. But you need to come out of your comfort zone, folks, and start watching this stuff, because it's amazing. And I will, like, RRR will be a comfort movie for me for the rest of my life, because even at 3 hours long, there's just so much to enjoy in it.
So for me, I'll run through. This is my top 10 as it currently sits, but it may continue to change. Obviously, okay. I'm still watching. I see movies, you know, as they're basically available, mostly digitally. 10 was Glass Onion, which I liked. I didn't love. Nice. 9 was Nope. 8 was a movie, it was submitted for the best international film, I believe from Venezuela, but did not make even the shortlist, called La Caja, which I had, we did a month subscription to Mubi for another movie I'm going to mention in a few minutes here.
Nice.
And it was on there, and I was like, I'll check this out. It is fantastic and just a great example of, yeah, you definitely should. It's also not very long. It is, it's a small movie and just a great example. Like, I love movies like that are reminders. There are great movies coming out from all over the world in all kinds of languages, and we have such an American English-centric view of movie making that, you know, it's just easy to forget that there are a lot of other great movies. And it's hard to find a lot of these also. You know, if they don't get a nomination, you'd never hear of it. 7 was Tar. 6 was The Menu. Strongly recommend. Was actually a little low-key disappointed. Didn't get a original screenplay nomination, but that was a long shot. I just thought that movie was incredibly clever. And of all the movies of, like, rich people are terrible, that was the best, I actually thought.
Yeah.
5 was The Eternal Daughter, which I think the snub of the year for me might actually be Tilda Swinton not getting a Best Actress nomination for playing two characters and doing them both extremely well. 4 was After Sun. 3 was Decision to Leave, which made the shortlist for Best International and didn't make the final 5, which I think is shocking and a little gross. Like, the Oscars, I know Parasite won. The Oscars have to get over whatever their antipathy is towards Korean cinema, because South Korea produces some of the best films in the world year after year. Good. And Burning got snubbed. Was that 5 years ago? Same thing. Made the shortlist, didn't make the final 5. That was the best movie of that whole year for me, and I would argue one of the probably 5 best movies of that entire decade. And they just whiffed. 2 was The Banshees of Inisherin, and number 1 on my list right now is Everything Everywhere All at Once, and I'm not sorry.
No, you shouldn't be. It's really good. It was number 10 on my list, but, like, Keith, this was a good year for movies. Like, I saw some real crap. Like, this was a... on paper, like, to bring it back again, the on paper of the 2011 MLB draft of years. Like, there were a ton of movies this year that I would be like, this would be my favorite movie a lot of years. And it just so happened that a movie from India that I had no clue existed up until that review ended up being my favorite. But, like, your traditional studios put out A24, my goodness gracious. Like, they may need to run the country, because they are so good at what they do. Everything they put out ends up being good, man. It is unbelievable. And unfortunately, you know, they've had not a lot of Oscar run because they don't have the same type of budget that a Universal or a Disney has to promote the crap out of these movies. But they're always among my favorites. They are, like, just... the gimme. They are basically what I used to think Pixar was, with all due respect to Pixar. I like Turning Red. It was a totally fine movie. It was certainly not one I'm going to be thinking about a whole heck of a lot. Not the best animated year, even though there were 2 that made my list, but both of them were stop motion.
My favorite actually didn't get a nomination is My Father's Dragon. Oh, which I
did not see My Father's Dragon.
I think is on Netflix. It's streaming somewhere free. It is great. It looks great. I think it's Cartoon Saloon, whose stuff I just love, right? They did Wolfwalkers.
Yes. Wolfwalkers is amazing.
Yep, they did. The Afghan set. Suleiman. What the heck was that movie called? The Breadwinner? Song of the Sea, they did. And The Secret of Kells. Like, I just will watch anything they put out. I just love their stuff. And it's a very unique animation style, too, which I really appreciate. When in an era where computer, you know, big studio computer animation kind of all looks the same. Like, I don't need every movie to look like Boss Baby. Or even remind me the least bit of Oscar nominated.
I can't believe we had to talk about the
Boss Baby.
Boss Baby in one of those podcasts. Yep. I would get with that's probably the most stunning nomination I've seen from a movie that I've actually heard of. Like, to see
it's
that
the only reason I've watched that nominated. Movie. I was like, fine.
Oh my!
I've seen the other 4. Fine, I'll watch it. Yeah. And I was like, I'm never getting that time back, am I?
That was a weak year, because if I remember correctly, that was also the year that Ferdinand was nominated, and I called it the Diet Peach Snapple of movies. Yes. Perfectly fine.
There were better movies that year, but they were like more obscure. Like I think if I remember correctly, that was might have been the same year as The Girl Without Hands, which was a hand drawn fairy tale, dark fairy tale movie.
Yes.
That was just so much better. I mean, I was on one that spring about here's another animated movie that's better than Boss Baby.
Real quick, I wanted to play. Can you guess what the heaviest favorite is of all of the Oscar nominations in terms of betting?
And it's something we didn't discuss.
It is. We kind of discussed it, but it's like of all the categories, what category is the biggest favorite?
Is it Pinocchio?
It is not, but that is up there. That is minus 2,000 with Marcel the Shell with Shoes on it, plus 13 to 1 next.
Which is the same as Kwan's odds, right?
Yes, exactly. All Quiet on the Western Front is minus 4,000. You would have to bet $4,000 in order to win 100 on All Quiet on the Western Front.
For which category? I didn't hear you say.
I'm sorry, Best International Feature.
Which is funny because 4,000. It's up against, I don't think it was nominated for, who knows what the reason was, but didn't Argentina 1985 win that category at the Golden Globes?
It did, yeah. Yes.
Which is unspectacular, yeah, but a very well done movie.
Yeah.
And that's on
Amazon Prime. Enjoyed it. But I was very surprised to see. Yeah, it's on Amazon Prime. I was very surprised to see that win. But yeah, The Quiet Girl in Argentina 1985 at plus 1,000. EO at plus 16. I was very happy that EO got that nomination for reasons that should be obvious after I just talked about it. And then Close is not close at plus 3,500. But yeah, the biggest lock of locks. And this is often true, especially lately where we've been seeing international features being nominated for Best Picture. It would be really weird if they didn't win, to say, this was one of the 10 best movies, but it wasn't the best international feature. That would be a very odd thing. And in fact, they should probably, when that happens, take the betting odds off the table because, duh, how can it not be? Like, there would be absolutely, even for a organization that has made some very big logical mistakes, there would be less than zero logic in terms of having the best international feature not be the film that was nominated for Best Picture.
Yep. My guest today has been my friend Chris Crawford, who you can find his Patreon, patreon.com/MLB Prospect Guides. You can find more of his work over at RotoWire, and you can follow him on the Bird site as long as it still exists. Crawford_MILB. Yeah, by the time this podcast is posted, it could be gone. Chris, thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure, my friend. Thanks for having me.
That's all for this week's show. Thank you so much for listening, especially if you made it through the whole thing. It was a little bit longer than normal, but we had a lot of movies to get through. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Keith Law, at least as long as it still exists. I am also on Spoutable at the same, also just at Keith Law. If you're enjoying this podcast, please listen and subscribe. It's available on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, every place you can, Stitcher, any place you can get podcasts. And if you do listen on iTunes, I know many of you have left positive reviews there. And I just want to say, I do see them from time to time. I do check, and I really appreciate the kind words from everyone. Thanks so much for listening. Stay safe.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.